Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 39 degrees under overcast skies, and they have wind speeds to 20 from the east at the airport right now. Look for a chance of rain and snow showers before 1 p.m. today, then a chance of rain showers. Partly sunny skies too, though, for this afternoon, with a high near 42, southeast winds gusting to 20. Coming up on the Midday Report, bird flu is not in Alaska yet. Our new ranked choice voter system is about to be up and running. And some wood bison have been brought from Canada to Alaska as part of an effort to restore the animal's population here in Alaska.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Russian strikes are intensifying in Ukraine. Missile attacks in Kharkiv and to the south, Lviv, where hopes of relative safety faded with news that the city had suffered its first civilian deaths since the start of the war in late February. But Pentagon spokesman John Kirby told reporters a short time ago that Russia is still focused on the east and south.
We have continued to see the concentration of their airstrikes and artillery in the Donbas and in the south, particularly around and in Mariupol. That's where the preponderance of their strike activity has gone, and the fighting in Mariupol, as you guys have all seen, continues. The Ukrainians are still resisting. The city has not fallen to the Russians, but they continue to pound it from the air and through long-range fires.
Last week, President Biden authorized an additional $800 million in military aid to Ukraine. Kirby says the first shipment was on its way 2 days later. He says the speed was unprecedented. Abortion remains unavailable in Kentucky after a new state law took effect late last week. Reproductive rights groups are asking a federal court to block the new legislation. They say the policy makes it impossible for doctors to provide abortions. Here's NPR's Sarah McCammon.
The new law, known as HB 3, took effect immediately under an emergency provision after Republican lawmakers voted to override Democratic Governor Andy Beshear's veto. The law creates new regulations for both surgical abortion procedures and abortion pills. Heather Gatnerick with the Kentucky ACLU says, among other things, the law requires providers to fill out paperwork that doesn't yet exist.
So there's no way for providers to go ahead and provide either abortion without being able to fill out the particular form that the state wants that simply hasn't been created.
The ACLU and Planned Parenthood have filed federal lawsuits seeking to restore abortion services while the law is challenged. But for now, clinics say they're not providing abortions in Kentucky. Sarah McCammon, NPR News.
The far-right conspiracy media outlet InfoWars has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in Texas. For member station KUT, Joseph Lee reports the company and its founder, Alex Jones, are facing insolvency due to multiple defamation lawsuits filed Sunday over Jones' claims that the 2012 mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School was a hoax.
The bankruptcy filing shows InfoWars has about $50,000 in assets and owes up to $10 million in liabilities. Creditors listed include some relatives of the 20 children and 6 educators killed in the 2012 school shooting in Connecticut. Jones has lost 3 defamation lawsuits for spreading lies about the murder victims. Trials are set to begin to determine how much Jones must pay family members in damages, but the bankruptcy filing puts the civil litigation on hold. 2 other companies connected to Jones have also filed for bankruptcy. I'm Joseph Leahy in Austin.
The Dow closes down 39 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
A worrisome new strain of avian flu is sweeping through wild bird populations in the lower 48. There haven't been any confirmed cases in Alaska. But as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, officials in the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge are on the lookout for signs of the deadly bird virus.
The first domestic case of highly pathogenic avian influenza was first detected in the southeastern U.S. back in January. It's made it as far west as Colorado since then, and spring migration season means it's likely on the move. Robin Corcoran is a bird biologist for the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge.
With birds, you know, moving from south to north this time of year, there's the possibility that it may, you know, end up in Alaska, so we should be vigilant.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the risk to humans is low, but more than 24 million birds have died so far in the continental United States. That's the second deadliest avian flu outbreak in the nation in nearly a decade. To be fair, most of those reported deaths were from commercial poultry producers culling their flocks of chickens, geese, and other farmed species to prevent further spread. But the virus has had about a 90% mortality rate for smaller backyard flocks. At a virtual avian flu update last month, Alaska State Veterinarian Dr. Bob Gerlach said bald eagles and mallard ducks and other wild species have also been hard hit.
Or this is a unique strain, and we are seeing neurologic signs as well as mortalities in wild birds. So this is a little bit different.
Corcoran says in places like Kodiak Island with large, vibrant bird populations, it might not be that unusual to find a dead bald eagle on a beach. But anything seemingly out of the ordinary should be reported.
We're also always on the lookout for these unusual mortality events. So if we see a large number of carcasses, say five or more, that's the kind of thing we want the public to report to either Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the state agencies, or to the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Residents and their pets should avoid touching dead birds they find. Hunters should also be on the lookout and report any birds that might be coughing and sneezing or showing any other signs of illness. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Until last month, the team at Alaskans for Better Elections had until the entire summer was through to get the public up to speed on the state's new voter-approved election system. But that new system is now getting its first test sooner than expected, following the passing of longtime U.S. Representative Don Young. The state is holding a special by-mail primary to temporarily fill his seat on June 11th. That speeds up the timeline for Jason Grin and his team.
You know, everything that we had planned, I'd say, from June, July, and August leading up into the primary, changed overnight.
Grin is executive director of Alaskans for Better Elections, a group that campaigned to get the election changes passed in 2020. Now they're embarking on a voter education campaign to teach Alaskans about the new system. The upcoming special primary will be the first go of the new system.
But in many ways, it's actually, you know, we're trying to see it as an opportunity, and really the silver lining for us is going, okay, as opposed to all the other races you have to think about, now you can think about these changes on just one race.
The changes come after Alaskan voters passed ballot measure 2 in November 2020, greenlighting two main changes on how state and federal elections are conducted. One is that primary elections will now be open primaries. That means every voter receives the same ballot, regardless of party registration. They'll pick one candidate from the list, and the top four vote-getters from each race will move on to the general election. Which brings change number 2. The general elections will be ranked choice. That means there will be up to 4 candidates for voters to choose from and rank in order of preference.
If you think of it as looking at a menu on a restaurant going, "Wow, that pizza sounds really good, but so do the tacos. I'm not really feeling, you know, soup and salad, and I really am not going to go for the seafood." Think of it in that same vein for candidates. You'll rank them in a preferential order, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
That's not to say voters have to rank candidates they don't like. Voters can rank as many candidates as they'd like. Grin says that's a common misconception.
I'd say the number one question we get asked often is, well, what happens if I only like one person? Or you're going to make me vote for people I don't want to. And of course, we would never ask that. Like I said, I was a legislator. I'm a voter. I would never want to be in a position of having to support someone I don't want to.
The new system has come with pushback. The ballot measure to get changes through passed by a narrow margin in 2020 and received no votes from most Kenai Peninsula voters, and it just overcame a final legal challenge earlier this year. Gren says no matter how voters feel about the new system, it's important they know how to vote come June when they will have their pick of nearly 50 candidates in the special by-mail election. More wood bison have been imported from Canada to Alaska as part of a decades-long effort to restore the animal's population in the state. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, some of the young animals will be added to a herd the state has established in western Alaska.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the Bureau of Land Management worked with Parks Canada to bring 40 11-month-old, 400-pound wood bison to Fairbanks.
As far as bison standards go, they're pretty small. They're about the same size as an adult female muskox.
State wood bison biologist Tom Seaton says the young animals were trucked to Fairbanks from Elk Island National Park in Alberta.
Elk Island National Park has a disease-free, healthy wood bison available for conservation purposes in Canada. So we were able to get some of their surplus and import them.
Seaton says Parks Canada charged a $16,000 care and handling fee for the bison, which are now staying at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Large Animal Research Station, or LARS.
We've got to go through another 30 days of isolation of them here at LARS, and then work toward plans of release.
Seaton says most of the young wood bison are likely destined to augment a group also sourced from Elk Island and transplanted to the lower Innoko Yukon River region 7 years ago. The effort, spearheaded by state and federal agencies, Alaska Native and other groups, reestablished the animals in Alaska where they disappeared from the wild in the early 20th century. Seaton says the new bison will likely be barged in late June or early July to an area along the Innoko River where the herd groups up prior to the rut.
It's most likely that the wild animals will be very curious about these new young ones, and these new young ones are going to want to connect with those adults. We'll also use some recorded sounds of bison interactions that might help draw in the wild ones.
Seaton says the young bison will be held in a pen until they connect with the wild herd, which has remained in the area where 130 of the animals were initially transplanted in 2015. They currently number about 105. Fish and Game Interior and Eastern Arctic Regional Supervisor Darren Bruning says some of the newly imported animals could eventually be used to reestablish more bison herds in Alaska.
For additional release sites that have yet to be determined or identified.
Bruning emphasizes that there's broad support for wood bison restoration.
So many members of the public and organizations and government agencies, native corporations and tribal entities and communities all across Alaska and even beyond Alaska, it's been an effort of great international interest.
Bruning and Seaton say the public can view the young wood bison at UAF's LARS facility, but both caution people not to disturb the animals as they are still adjusting. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The cruise industry says Alaska can expect about 1.5 million ship passengers to visit this season, which opens in under 2 weeks. Meanwhile, questions remain about vaccination rates of visitors and the extra hurdles required to enter Canada. On Wednesday, KHNS's Mike Swayze talked with Cruise Lines representative Brian Salerno for an industry perspective.
Brian, thanks so much for being here. I'm just going to ask you this straight out. How many people are coming to Skagway this summer?
You know, I don't have it broken down, but overall for Alaska, we're estimating about 1.5 million passengers. That's on 600 voyages by 40 individual ships. So, the season will probably start out a little bit slower and will gradually build. But that's the guesstimate right now.
And how does that compare to, let's say, 2018 to 2019?
Well, I think it's be roughly comparable, to pre-pandemic levels.
I've had a lot of questions, Brian, about the Arrive Can app and, you know, specifically in Skagway, a lot of tours will emanate from Skagway and go up into Canada. And so one of the questions I'm getting from tour companies is, will everyone that gets on a cruise ship be required to fill out an Arrive Can app before they depart on their cruise ship?
That's my understanding, yes. If the ship is going to call in Canada, and virtually all of them will, other than, you know, potentially the rare U.S. flag vessel that has no need to stop in Canada, there would be a need to complete the Arrive Can app as a, you know, condition of entry into Canada. And the cruise lines are prepared to, you know, to check that upon embarkation so that it doesn't become an issue, you know, during the course of the trip.
Okay, and then I'm told by Canadian officials that once they have filled out that Arrive Can app, it's good for the duration of their cruise, so they don't have to update it throughout the cruise, and then they can utilize that to, let's say, leave from Skagway and go up to the Yukon. Is that similar with the information that you've gotten?
That's my understanding as well.
Okay. Another question a lot of people have asked is, will everybody on board the cruise ships be vaccinated?
Sure. Well, most people will be. You know, there may be a few exceptions. Obviously, children, you know, under five aren't required to be. There's some question about whether, you know, children under 12 would be. But overall, the cruises that are operating to Alaska and certainly into Canada are going to have extremely high vaccination rates. Most will operate at 95% crew and passengers. Even those where it's just below, you know, the 95% threshold, which would characterize them as highly vaccinated, still above 90% in virtually every case. Plus, everybody getting on board the cruise ship needs to be tested, and there's very limited time windows for obtaining that test. So everybody that you're on a ship with is vaccinated and recently tested, and then course, there's other, you know, layers of protection that are in place, you know, sanitation procedures and air filtration, and plus the ability to respond if somebody does in fact come down, you know, with symptoms. So it's a highly protected environment.
Brian, throughout the years, we've had a lot of international travelers come to Skagway. Will the cruise season this year look similar? Will there be an international flair, or will it be mostly folks from, you know, the Western Hemisphere?
Good question. You know, we're seeing, you know, more interest in international travel now that many of the travel restrictions have been lowered. I think we're still going to see a lot of international visitors to Alaska because it's on a lot of people's bucket lists. But predominantly, I think you're, you know, probably Western Hemisphere, at least to start.
Okay. Brian, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Take care, Mike.
That was a conversation with Brian Salerno, the Cruise Lines International Association's Senior Vice President for Marine Policy. The State House Finance Committee has been considering a proposed bill that would pave the way for improved and equitable high-speed internet in rural Alaska. Earlier this year, the U.S. passed a federal infrastructure bill that set aside $65 billion for the broadband projects in the United States. According to the bill, states are supposed to prioritize those funds for unserved and underserved communities. States must also compete for some of that money. This bill sets up systems that would make Alaska eligible for that funding.
We have some real exciting times ahead of us concerning broadband.
That's Dillingham Representative Bryce Edgman. He's the main sponsor of the bill that the House is considering. Edgman says Alaska stands to gain a lot of funding from the federal infrastructure bill.
The initial estimates are anywhere between $1 and $2 billion, with the high probability of a lot more.
Edgman's state bill would set up a broadband office to be in charge of applying for, receiving, and distributing those federal dollars. But first, it will have to create a map that shows where Alaskans have limited or no access to high-speed internet. The bill also aims to make high-speed internet affordable for all Alaskans. It would set up a broadband parity fund that would keep costs in rural areas similar to the costs in urban areas. Edgman says the money for this program would come from the federal government. This would be a big change from how things are now. In rural areas of Alaska, residents with low-speed internet can pay hundreds of dollars per month on their bills. Alaskans in urban areas pay far less for high-speed internet. The House Finance Committee will hear public testimony on the bill.
Rather, the House Finance Committee heard public testimony on this bill on Friday.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Insight Daily Radio. Country music icon Trace Adkins is back for a third season of INSP's cowboy competition series, Ultimate Cowboy Showdown. In Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, top cowboys from across the United States compete to win a herd of cattle worth at least $50,000, a coveted belt buckle, and a lifetime of bragging rights. Each week, viewers will watch them lock horns in a series of grueling individual and team challenges. They are judged on their skills, knowledge, grit, and passion. Chock full of explosive drama and lots of ego, the pressure is on for the cowboys to prove they have what it takes. We spoke to Trace about this exciting series.
I would describe Ultimate Cowboy Showdown as the apprentice on horseback, or top chef on horseback. You know, it's a lot of pressure. Well, first of all, wait till you see. I mean, the show open, that panoramic, I mean, this is one of those, it's like an old John Houston Western, you know, it's beautiful. I mean, just this epic, it's cowboy. I mean, you know, all the movies you've seen over the years, this is it. This is the ultimate backdrop for the Ultimate Cowboy Showdown. It's gorgeous.
That's country music icon Trace Adkins letting viewers know what they can expect in the third season of INSP's cowboy competition series, Ultimate Cowboy Showdown, which premieres Thursday, April 21st at 8 p.m. Eastern on INSP. There's more at www.ultimatecowboyshowdowntv.com. Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. It is Monday today, the 18th day of April, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 6:50. It won't set again until 9:28. That will give us 14 hours and 38 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 61, set in 1965. A record low is 17, set in 1977, and it's currently 40 degrees out at the airport under overcast skies. They have east winds at 12 miles per hour right now. Those winds are expected to turn to the southeast today and gust as high as 20. Partly sunny skies today, but a chance of rain and snow showers, then a chance of rain showers later this afternoon. Look for rain before 5 p.m. tonight, too, turning to rain and snow. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 36. East winds to 10, gusting to 20. For tomorrow, snow is likely, possibly mixed with rain before 11 a.m., then just a chance of rain after that. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 44. East winds to 15, gusting to 20. They are talking about partly sunny skies for Wednesday. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 4:16 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be a 7 tide, followed by a low tide at 9:47 this evening of 1.1 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 4:40 this afternoon. That will be a 14-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:29 p.m. this evening of 1.5 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Tuesday. East winds to 25 knots today and seas to 7 feet. East winds to 25 knots tomorrow, seas building to 11 feet and up to 12 feet tomorrow night. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight. East wind to 20 knots tonight, seas to 6 feet, coming up to 25 knots later this evening.
For tomorrow, east 20, seas to 6 feet. A celebration of life for Victoria Geyer will be held tonight at 7 p.m. at St. Mary's Gym. It'll be followed by a finger food potluck. In lieu of flowers, donations are being accepted to defer funeral expenses. That's 7 tonight at St. Mary's Gym. Also tonight, the Consolidation Committee is having their regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Conference Room. Tomorrow, Service Area Number 1 will be having a board meeting. That's happening at 5:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. And Thursday, the Assembly will be having their regular meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. You're invited to an open house at the Kodiak Fire Station tomorrow between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. It's a chance to meet the team from Wolf Architecture that will be designing the replacement for the 60-year-old facility. Come by and enjoy a warm beverage and a cookie while you learn more about this essential project and share your thoughts. You can be part of shaping the future of emergency response in Kodiak for the next 60 years. Again, that's tomorrow, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the fire station downtown. IL Bells will be ringing in May with their 11th annual Spring Ring. It's happening May 1st at 3 p.m. in the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. $15 general admission is all. Hey, Kodiak, have you heard about the new asphalt art project happening downtown? Would you like to be involved in the project and learn more? Possibly give feedback to the project team? If so, join the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative's focus group. Their next meeting is next Wednesday, April 27th, from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library. For more information, email curator at kodiakhistorymuseum.org, or you can call them on the telephone at 907-486-5917. The award-winning Kodiak Shakespeares are proud to present their final production of the season, the literary classic William Golding's Lord of the Flies. Adapted for the stage by Nigel Williams, Lord of the Flies takes place in the midst of a raging war and follows a group of schoolchildren from preteens to teenagers who find themselves alone on a deserted tropical island. At first, they develop rules and a system to govern themselves, but their civilization eventually devolves into a bloody climax. This classic story explores the dark side of humanity and questions the very idea of civilization. Performances will take place at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium beginning Thursday, April 21st, through Saturday, April 23rd for 6:30 p.m. showings, and Sunday, April 24th, there will be a 2 p.m. matinee. Tickets are $15 for adults and $5 for students, and they're available at the kodiakshakespeares.ludus.com. That's LUDUS.com, and at the door. The play is not recommended for younger audiences. Contact Jared Griffin at 907-942-1903 if you have other questions. Well, Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m., the library hosts a Lego club. It's a drop-in program for youth after school. Children under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. Thursday, April 21st at 3:30 p.m. is the library's next chess club meeting. Drop in to learn, practice, or sharpen your chess skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open for all ages. Again, that's next Thursday, April 21st. There will be no story time this week, unfortunately, but library trivia returns tonight, 6:30 p.m. Next Monday, April 25th. At 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. Find the Zoom link on the library's homepage and join in the fun to sharpen the gray matter. All are welcome. Do you know about Hoopla? Thanks to a grant from the Institute for Museums and Library Services, Kodiak Public Library now offers Hoopla, a digital multimedia service. You can borrow movies, TV shows, music, audiobooks, magazines, comics, and books on demand. There's no waiting, and it's free with your library card. Stream or download up to 7 items each month. Check it out at hoopladigital.com. And the library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday. Their phone number is 486-8686.
Do you need to see a doctor, dentist, or optometrist? Arctic Care is offering no-cost medical, dental, optometry, and veterinary services to anyone in the Kodiak community May 4th through May 13th. To learn more about the services available through Arctic Care, the location of services, and to schedule an appointment, go to kodiakhealthcare.org or call 907-486-9870. Arctic Care 2022 is a no-cost healthcare service program provided by the United States Department of Defense Arctic Care Innovative Readiness Training Program in partnership with Kodiak Area Native Association.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.